caught in the dark with a radio spark. Meet me where the most light falls. You are listening to Where the Most Light Falls with DJ Tamara, broadcasting around the world at spiritplantsradio.com. Turn on, tune in, and visit us on the web at spiritplantsradio.com for schedules, playlists, archives, and more. Hello and welcome to Where the Most Light Falls, which has been described as an audio literary journal. This is an ongoing experiment in sharing the writing of well-known and lesser-known writers, especially poets. Today's show will feature poetry and narratives related to journeys both inward and outward, and we will be accompanied by the music of South Korean pianist Yeruma. The album is The Very Best of Yeruma. Let me get that started now. Let's begin with a reading from the 100th edition of the Cynical Literary Journal that has just come out online and will soon follow in print. I am happy to have several poems included in this edition, and I'll share one or two with you later, but I want to draw first from Raymond Sillard's expanding work, Notes from New England, and share specifically the section entitled Through the Door in the Wall, 20 Years of Tripping. If you don't know Raymond, he's the editor of The Cynical and the radio guru behind the radio station you are presently listening to. The narrative begins. The following is a version of some of the events that occurred to me back in 1997, the year I first tried LSD. I've recently dived into many of my old notebooks, trying to dig into daylight again who I was back then. Let old pages reveal anew how my path has shifted and shifted again and again because of my experiences that year. I was nearly 34 years old when my psychedelic adventures began on April 5th, 1997. Picked to be on the jury for an assault and kidnapping case despite my protest, but then dismissed, free to leave, escape the minions of state power manifested. So last night, I celebrated with the dollar a glass Portage red wine at my current favorite bar dive, Eddie's Place in Cambridge. In the wood-paneled back room, pumping the jukebox with quarters to hear Lynyrd Skynyrd's Sweet Home Alabama, Bob Seger's Like a Rock, The Who, Aerosmith, Tom Petty and the like, waiting for Rick. I remember thinking when I was 17 I still could have joined the race of men, but it didn't happen. My parents taught me nothing of the world and how to travel it well. Jenny smiled and turned me down, and so I sought love in a clumsy, stumbling way, each new encounter emphasizing my ignorance, my inadequacy. ever struggling with these old angers and woes, not knowing a way to salve them new. Mud uncertainty, then and now. Rick finally came and we escalated the red wine night higher and higher. He had a Jack Kerouac book to shout from too, and there were dartboards on the wall to try higher and higher, and then a moment on snowy Carnell Street near my studio apartment in Zombie Town. Long and dark, but for very occasional street lamps, deserted buildings, when he kneeled and kissed the pavement, praising everything. I love that piece because it really goes along with my motto that appeared for a while on my poetry page on Facebook. And the motto is, there is something among us to be praised. On this journey, this human journey that we're all on, there's a lot of sadness, a lot of tragedy. Right now there are hurricanes and fires. There's heartbreak. But even among all of that, there is something about the beauty of this universe to be shared and to be praised. There's a kind of sacred geometry in all of it. And I'll read that poem now. It's one of my poems that was published in The Cynical. Sacred geometry. In the geometry of our love, I thread myself into your theorem, its synopsis held tightly in your throat. Across your proud octagonal heart, 8 sides to our every argument, all logic cast aside for pure art, the matter decided by our shapes, properties, relative positions, by the lines we draw around ourselves, by the dark space that keeps us apart. You know, poetry and love are both kind of unusual obsessions. And Colin James has got a poem by that name also in this edition of The Cynical, and I just fell in love with the poem. Colin James lives in Western Massachusetts. His poetry regularly appears in The Cynical, so you can go back and take a look at some of the previous editions. But let me share unusual obsessions and their correct pronunciations with you today. My father, the avid cyclist, attempted to ride around the earth on his bike backwards. It got a bit tricky climbing the Alps. Right of way confused him. His hand signals, in turn, shocked The Hague. Shared the road with the less devout, the better parade. He had neck surgery in Poland. His profile forever changed. He began to resemble Mr. Potato Head. Despondent, he jumped off the largest single arch bridge in the world. It was the way down he craved. Sometimes our journeys take us to places we never thought we would be. For example, Ace Bodges, another writer in The Cynical, describes the view from prison in the next poem. Ace lives in Charleston, West Virginia. His poetry first appeared in The Cynical, edition 99, in April of 2017. His poems in this issue are from his volume, The Prisoners, published in 2014 by Brick Road Poetry Press. Prison View. First moon in 5 months, full outside my window at the Martinsburg Correctional Center, where I've just arrived 6 hours from my former jail home. Same spare walls, spiritless meals, but new clothes and a new view. A field of short grass, scrub and dirt like a nature preserve in Kenya. Vast, unreachable sky, few stars and moon. I cling to that great dot in these hardest nights of hardest days. It warms me with love like a faded, broken valentine. Swears I'll see you again. I'll wait for you. I will. Next, I'll read his poem, The Prisoner's Gospel. Blessed are the broken, for they carry their justification with them like a union card. Blessed are the first offenders, for theirs is the kingdom of second chances. Blessed are the unloved, for they shall suffer only for themselves. Blessed are the flight risks, for they still have places to go. Rejoice in influenza, medicated, sleeping away the days, but woe unto he who has learned to hope, for his eyes are stained glass windows in a crypt, and woe unto husbands who see their wives remembering life without them. Yes, and blessed are the broken, and woe unto the broken, and rejoice in the breaking, for such men find peace in their pieces, rebuild themselves. A monument with scars, a book of the word with shattered spine, duct tape keeping its guts from the cold stone floor. It's an extraordinary poem. And it makes me think of the tragedy of September the 11th, the monument to those people who were lost on that day, who will never be forgotten. Blessed are the broken. Thank you. Now I'd like to tell you about somebody I met on Twitter. He's a poet named Alan Mitnick. Alan was raised and still lives in New Jersey. He's 52, and he's an English professor at a 2-year college. He grew up as a classical violinist, but then heard Jimi Hendrix in 1980. He works occasionally as a gigging and session guitarist, and regularly plays in praise and worship. He's a fan of music and poetry and loves a variety. Beatles, Miles Davis, Richard Thompson, T.S. Eliot, Billy Collins, Mary Oliver, and many more. As a musician and writer, he is a jack of all trades and a master of none, and he loves it. He says he also makes incredible jambalaya and even better chocolate truffles. What I'm going to share with you are some of his short poems that he regularly posts on Twitter. The first one doesn't have a title. I don't want as much to be remembered as just forgotten slowly. One day, the mailman bringing a different name on cards and bills to this door. The second one's called 360. So many handles we've built, and not one made to hold us to this fast-spinning earth, such as our faith in gravity or our doubt in handles. And number 3 is called Anima. I think it's my favorite. 8 a.m. is the orchestra tuning up. We take our seats for the conductor. A sparrow from the woodwinds winks at a robin in the strings. Just glorious short poems that manage to encapsulate so much feeling, so much magnificent imagery. I'll turn to another friend named Yvonne Brewer now. Yvonne is in my online creativity group called Friends of That Curious Love of Green. And if you're interested in joining us, you can find us on Facebook. Yvonne is from Cork. She lives in East Cork, Ireland. From time to time, she writes poetry, and her writing is greatly inspired by nature, fairies, spirituality, and her children. Her full name is Yvonne Brewer Spillane, but I like to call her Fairy. Here's her poem called His House. She looked out at the morning mist, listened to the seagulls bickering, felt the salty air write a message on her blemished skin, and got on her rusty bicycle. It is time, she whispered to the curious ocean, to return to his house. As she pedaled along the old beach road, the memory of the house's soft air seemed to already blow the salt from her hair. She recalled how the windows were like mirrors of sunlight and reflected feelings of everything being just right. She got closer to his house and the fog got thicker. Her bicycle creaked like the heavy gates as she arrived. As always, he felt a breeze on his neck and shoulders when she entered. And he watched as nobody walked through his rooms, as it happened on this one day every year, when his heart grieved her loss and her spirit celebrated the joy of returning to his house. The second poem is a memory of Yvonne's, of being with her son when he was a toddler, as they sat in their garden, watching the clouds and just absorbing nature. It's called The Pigeons Knew. The pigeons knew. Cloud carriages, she thought. Look, ma'am, cloud pigs. They sat under the shady sycamore, hair dotted with twigs, feathers falling, fairy voices calling, butterflies circling her little boy's hair, magic everywhere, only seen by a few. The trees, the wind, and the pigeons knew. Sometimes our journey is spiritual. Back at the beginning of August, I was on a kind of spiritual journey for 2 weeks at Rivendell Writers Colony in Suwanee, Tennessee, a remarkable place. While I was there, I met some wonderful writers, including Jason Myers. Jason grew up in Western Maryland, graduated from Bennington College, and received a master's degree in fine arts from NYU. In 2012, he received a Master of Divinity from Emory University and was licensed as a minister at Dr. King's home church, Ebenezer Baptist. His work has appeared in numerous journals, including the North American Review and the Paris Review. He lives with his wife, fiction writer Allison Grace Myers, outside Austin, where he works as a hospice chaplain. He shared with me a poem that he wrote while we were in Suwannee, and it's called Natural Bridge. When I arrive, someone's already there, as someone always is. We learn to go from the gone, to give from the gift. I start to walk out to meet my forebearer, but my legs wobble, wary of a fall, the way down. Later, the ascent will trouble me, fill my lungs with weight. Now, in the eternal now that is also the eternal then, I gather balance like a deer who pauses at water's edge before she makes the edge ripple. Days of rain left puddles in rocks' dimples. Petals on the path, pearls on the galaxies of moss that constellate around cave's mouth. What does cave say? What do lichen, bat, bloodroot, sandstone say? I don't know, but I'm listening. Oh Lord, I am listening. It's wonderful to be aware of the beauty of nature. It's also wonderful to be able to share it with another human being. Another friend I met at Rivendell was Deborah Ager. She's a marketing mentor and a business coach and a writer. She's with Radiant Media Labs and helps service-based small businesses use storytelling and marketing to sparkle in what she calls the sea of blah, so they increase their reach and income. I saw something she had written on Facebook the other day and asked her permission to share it. It begins, "I left my car in the middle of the street, even though I needed to pick my daughter up at school in 20 minutes. I wouldn't realize I'd left my car there until later. She was standing by her front gate and crying into her hands. Earlier that day, I'd rushed from task to task so I could finish them all before I drove to pick my daughter up from school. Checking items off my to-do list felt satisfying. Rush, rush, rush. When I saw my neighbor crying in her yard, I smelled flowers. She grew a lot of lilies and irises and hired landscapers to arrange them just so. When I saw my neighbor in her yard, I stopped. The car in the middle of the street, my timely pickup of the child threatened. Rush, rush. All of that melted away. I approached her and she raised her face from her hands. We'd never met before, though she knew my daughter a little. My grandson killed himself, she said. I'm so sorry. My heart physically hurt. That's how I feel things. We hugged for a minute or two. I'm not a touchy-feely person with strangers, so a hug this long was unusual for me, but I didn't think about it at the time. When we stopped hugging, I apologized that I had to leave to pick up my daughter at school. But it was okay. I'd done the work I could do. That's when I noticed I'd left my car where it could block other cars. Although we live on a dead end, there's a decent amount of traffic. However, not one car had tried to pass in that time. And I ended up being on time to pick up my daughter. Sometimes the world works with you. Sometimes you realize you need to put aside the rushing, the to-do list, and just be with another human. Sometimes empathy is the answer. I've always felt like one of my purposes was to be the person who passes through someone's life to help them move on to the next thing they need to do. But I rejected that calling for years, and I rejected writing beyond poetry. To be honest, I was scared. In creative writing grad school, someone hired me to write copy for numerous clients. That someone would never tell the clients I was the copywriter. I was told to keep that a secret. This action affected me and made me think I wasn't good enough. Meanwhile, clients were cleaning up with my copy. I had to set those resulting fears aside before I could do the work I was meant to do. I believe in improving humanity, and I need to fulfill that mission. My superpower is helping to unearth stories for the betterment of the world. How I do that doesn't matter right now. The point is, I was born for this work. How about you? What's your purpose or superpower? Deborah's question is a perfect lead-in into our writing prompt for today. Grab a piece of paper and a pencil, or open up a Word document, and when you have time, respond to this question. What's your purpose or superpower? Or if you had a superpower, what would it be? You can send your responses to me at TamaraMilesSC@gmail.com or on Facebook at TamaraMiles.poet or in a direct message at Twitter. I'm on there as TamaraMilesSC. Okay, I'd like to share with you next the writing of a couple of brothers who are members of my online creativity group, Stephen Kinnamer and James Kinnamer. Stephen is in his words, a sarcastic, optimistic pessimist, a contrarian, and an extroverted introvert. His favorite author is Douglas Adams, and his favorite poet is Theodore Seuss. Guys, Dr. Seuss. His 50th birthday is coming up on Saturday. Happy half century to my friend. Now let me share with you a couple of his short poems about the journey of grieving that is all too familiar to those of us who've loved and lost. These are untitled. The rooms lay dark and empty where light and life once resided. A lone paladin roams the darkened doorways, a silent witness to love and laughter which once filled the walls. Now echoing with only the sound of footsteps of the last soul who recalls it all. And number two. When I am alone and silence surrounds me, the voices of those gone too soon come calling. They speak of things left undone and dreams unlived. And the only reply I can give is to cry the tears of those left behind. Grief is a private journey. I'd like to turn now to Stephen's brother, James Kinnamer, to a poem that takes a different approach to getting through and getting by in this life. This one is all about celebration. It's untitled. Exuberantly enjoying whirling and twirling, banking and swirling, looping and gliding, climbing and diving, laughing and flying. Bright sun is shining, fluffy clouds drifting, dreading the ending, breaking and landing, wings tightly furling, already dreaming, planning, scheming for sky high flying. In between the ups and downs, I've talked to you about Rivendell Writers Colony in Suwanee, Tennessee, but last year I was at the Suwanee Writers Conference, and when I was there I met a brilliant poet named Katie Balma. Kathleen Balma is a teacher, librarian, and translator. Her poetry has appeared in Hotel America, The Journal, Prelude, Rattle, Sugar House Review, and elsewhere. Her awards include a Fulbright year in Spain, a Pushcart Prize, and a fellowship from Rivendell Writers Colony. In 2015, she was a finalist for the Montreal International Poetry Prize, and in 2016, she was a Tennessee Williams Scholar at Suwanee Writers Conference. She lives in New Orleans. This poem is called Abraham Honestly, and it comes with a little note, an amusing note, a quote from an American college student's history paper. With his own two hands, Abe Lincoln built the log cabin he was born in. Oh, and Katie took that amusing statement and turned it into three poetic theories that are just extraordinary. Let's begin with theory one. Out of body Abe. The ghostly glob of fetal Abraham sneaks out of his mother's womb at night with architecture on his budding mind. In the first few months, the Lincoln bean can barely hold a toothpick, let alone a log, so he darts around his neighbor's place, plotting floor plans and examining crannies. By month two, his heart's really in it. By mid-trimester, he's using his tail to smooth out the mud mortar of his neighbor's house. Mud, he thinks, and feels his very first shiver. By month five, he's chopping thick stripes of wood by the light of his prenatal halo. By month six, he's strapping logs to his unborn back and floating them across miles of Kentucky airspace. By month seven, he's all over the roof like a Christmas specter. By month eight, his newly lit neurons are sparkling up the lawn as he flaps back and forth from womb to hearth, nesting like there's no state like home, no place like tomorrow. Theory two, born again Abe. When you make a house of your heart, no assembly is required, but some laying on of hands may be. Theory three, authorial Abe. Like many Abrahams before him, Lincoln enjoys limited omniscience whenever he writes speeches, treaties, bills, or commandments, and this has begun to affect his mind in arboreal ways. He often imagines what it must have been like for his pa to construct their homestead. How many times had the teenage Lincoln built that same boxy lodge in his mind, amputating trees and sanding them to naked plainness, putting, perhaps, more care into it than his own father had. This daydream kicks in like a nervous tick when he loses things, and for every log he stacks on his imaginary abode, a windy sigh rushes through the grassy blades of his beard. Since the war began, he's been adding rooms that were never there in his youth, and the walls are getting higher. So high the house is now a tower he must climb and climb. You can probably hear the sounds of nature stirring in my backyard. Cicadas and grasshoppers. And occasionally you'll hear my puppy sigh in his sleep or stretch, head outside. There's so much to celebrate, so much to be praised among us. I have a new friend that I met through a mutual acquaintance and through Twitter. Jimmy Coleman introduced me to Shantae Usual. Shantae has an extensive background in the performing arts. She started her career as a professional NFL cheerleader for the Washington Redskins, where she had the pleasure of performing in over 25 countries for the USO and other organizations. She later brought her talent to the world of theater and acting with appearances as the lead in the musical stage play Inner City and as Patrice on HBO's The Wire. Shantae has 3 new singles out. You can find them and listen to them and watch her videos at ShantaeUsual.com. I'd like to read for you something from an interview with her about trying to be successful in the music industry, because I think it applies to the attempt at living out any kind of art, making it your life's work. She says, "You cannot be in this industry or in anything you are passionate about in life and be fearful at the same time. It's like oil and water, the two don't mix. You must be faith-filled and fearless. There are always going to be people, whether it be one or many, that will say or do something that will hurt and or offend you, but you must stick to what you know is true about yourself, your abilities, your gifts. Believe in you. On the business side, it can be difficult when you're an artist trying to get your music out and heard, and being an individual with integrity and morals doesn't make this road any easier. But you end up with the right people and team to get the work done and the goal accomplished, and you keep moving to the next goal. The key is to not stop. Keep going. Don't make excuses. Just find the solution and don't lose yourself in the process of the journey." I am particularly fond of Shantae's song and video, Phoenix. So I do hope you'll take a look. Go to her website, www.shantaeusual.com. That's spelled S-H-A-U-N-T-E-U-S-U-A-L. Shantae Usual. And yes, that is her real last name. Now, I'd like to share with you the words of a poetry editor. This is from Abigail Michelini, who's the editor of Oyster River Pages, a new journal. And I was able to be part of that debut of this journal. They've published my poem, A Fancy. And I'll read that to you, but I want you to hear what Abigail said about the gathering of poems for this edition. She says, "I have the undue privilege of laying the following pieces before you. Though they were not meant as a collection, each of these poems sang harmonious notes along the same fledgling chapter of our river. I have carried them with me these last months, turning them over in my mouth like worn and treasured memories. As you read, I hope they tuck themselves under your tongue for the coming back, the wanting more, and the deepening fullness of this bank of poetry. Thank you, Abigail. Here's the poem called A Fancy. 1. I've a problem with my eye, she explained, as the doctor took his magnifying glass in hand and solemnly peered at the open orb without judgments of her whole person until he saw autumn there. A tiny piece of reddish leaf had lodged itself inside. Madam, you have looked too long at trees, a childish habit. 2. Lot's wife studied the smelling salts on the doctor's high shelf, which breathed themselves too deeply. 3. Once a psychic came to town, he heard golden glitter leaked from her far too bright young eyes. She did not want to be cured, though he offered earnestly. 4. Nothing but fancy, he wrote in his book, as if his own eye held not a silver key meant to turn a music box that played a song his childhood knew and used to sing by heart. I've got another musician friend, a pianist and singer, a poet and blogger, named Martha Maria. I had the great pleasure of spending some time with Martha, where she lives in the shadow of the Cumberland Mountains in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. She lives in a little white house, and it's where most of her music is produced and recorded. When she's not playing music, she is wife to Bob and mother to Joseph and Walker. When I visited her and she played her nocturnes for me, I wept because they were so beautiful. Lately, she's been experimenting with Japanese forms of poetry, and I'd like to share some of her poems with you today. The first one is a tanka, a Japanese form in the syllables 57577. The poem is called Wrens in Snow. No leaves on the trees. Now the sky is too open. In the shelter of rocks, wrens huddle together, hunting earthworms in the snow. The second one is called Fire on the Ridge, and this is a form called a Mutsumono, syllables 5757575. Fire on the ridge. With smoke suspended above ridge tops and mountains, fall fires singe the woods. Goldenrod crackles and burns like kindling in the flames. Hot blue tongues scour and devour dry grass, trunks scorched, the oaks remain. And finally, another Mutsumono. This one concerns the King Ranch in Texas, and she has an explanatory note that went with it. She says, it's still the biggest ranch in the U.S. She used to drive through it with her family, about 60 miles of nothing on either side of the road except signs warning us to watch for rattlesnakes if we stopped and got out of the car. We had to gas up in Kingsville before going onto the ranch. It was notorious. People disappeared in the ranch, never to be seen again. Driving through the King Ranch always spooked me out, she says. Here's the poem. Driving through King Ranch. A rush of hot wind and dusty grass shudders, parched. It stubbornly grows beneath the bleached, blistered sky. Open-eyed, Diamondbacks doze. They coil like rope on the sides of the road. Be careful where you step. You can hear Martha's music and read her blog at dogwooddaughter.com and at Bandcamp, which is a venue for independent musicians, at dogwooddaughter.bandcamp.com. Next, I'd like to share my friend Madeline Kennedy's poem, which she might not have realized was a poem. It was just some of her thoughts that she shared in the online creativity group, but I recognized it immediately as a poem. It's untitled. Light rain drips from the tree fern frond, sending tiny splashes dancing into the bird bath. Tiny green shoots emerge from the warming soil. Birds chirp and forage through the garden. There is a freshness in the air. Spring has arrived. It's spring where Madeline is. She lives in Australia. So it's wonderful to think that while we're in the middle of our autumn here, spring has started somewhere else in the world. Thank you, Madeline. I've been doing a writing experiment myself lately. I don't speak Irish Gaelic or write in that language, but because I've traveled to Ireland last year and I'm going again in October, I've become very interested in the language. Oh, there you hear my dog barking. He wants to write his own poems. Anyway, I want to learn a little bit of Irish, and I thought it'd be really fun if I worked with phrases in the Irish Gaelic and put together a poem translated into English. So I've been doing that. I wrote about, I think, 8 or 9 poems already. And this one's called Do You Believe in Ghost? One. An amethyst sky. I pressed my nose to the window. A man appeared at the door. He had a hungry appearance. My breathing felt constricted. I was trying to put a name to the face. This apparition then came through the door. It was as much as I could do to stay standing. I knew him. Indeed, he was a friend of mine. I hadn't laid eyes on him for years. 2. I only had to shut my eyes and I was back in Connemara. The wall was etched with the names of the dead. The date was etched into the wood. When the guards came, my friends abandoned me. The impossible. An abandoned village. I dosed myself up with medicines, magic potion, witchcraft, to escape from the bonds that hold you back. 3. You're still alive then? His face was alight. My voice had dwindled to a quaver. That poem turned out to be kind of a ghostly, mystical, dreamy poem about someone coming back from the dead. I've got another friend online, a young Nigerian poet named Ojo Taye. He says he uses poetry as a handy tool to hide his frustration with society. I'm going to read his poem, Beautiful Scars. The taste of metal fills my mouth. I lift my phone and the tremors in my fingers multiply. Have you ever thought of being devoured alive? I wish I could give you my insomnia for a few months, or even a few years, and take your sleep instead. I want to show you what it's like to be up at midnight without newborns to rock, wondering what the hell you are doing here on Earth, or why you should even stay. Let's talk about boys swallowing goldfish and how it makes me feel like I'm drowning, trapped, still in the tank. I can't breathe. The water has gone from murky to muddy, dark green with a stench like sulfur. Fresh grief, the black grime of my brain has descended and now seeps through all the pores of my body, squeezing the light out, and I'm sloshing around in the tank in the darkness. My sister would always say that the physical pain of a cut releases the mental one. So with the tip of a paperclip, I scrape the inside of my forearm until blood blooms like a small path to light. In the shower, I let the hot water rinse out the blood. I have a nice stack of scars, and I wonder whether they will still be there when I am old. I can hear the doctor say, "Talk back to the distorted thought, to the sadness." A waxing moon peers into my window, and I wonder whether I shall carry this forever. Oh, this journey. What else can we do but talk to each other? Listen to each other. Hold each other's hand through it. I've got a poem about summertime and about the lightning bugs, also known as fireflies. I think I'll share that one now. When my lover's eyes flash. In my hand a jar of lightning. Lampyridae beetles. Small catalytic machines whose larvae emit light. Summer climate bioluminescence. Color tuning. Green and yellow. Caution. Go. A luciferous flashlight to attract and to repel. Insect evolution, excitation, energy, kinetics. And in a rare event, male synchronous fireflies and blue ghost fireflies will blink in unison, 6 to 8 flashes, and then stay dark for several seconds, making a kind of laser light across a forest. Laser physics uses the term speckle to refer to a pattern made by a beam of light reflected on a surface, such as paper. An optical interference, spectral, an illuminated spot, dot, or dash, unwanted. But for the speckle-winged rangeland grasshopper, a method of concealment. Its wings speckled dark, its underside pale yellow-green, translucent. Grasshoppers, too, know how to fly when they need to. When you are reaching out a hand to try and catch them, try to hold them. Did you know holding a firefly will eventually make it stop glowing? We can't hold on too tightly to the bright things in the world. Not in the physical sense. Although we can hold them in words, we can hold them in our poems. And in that way, we and they and our experiences can become immortal. I'm going to share another poem from The Cynical. This is my poem, Ephesus Tonight, one show only. On stage, where volunteers had strung from the ceiling seven stars, John the Elder swallowed the opening act, first rolled slowly into his scroll, the sweetest spoken word he'd ever tasted. On his tongue a seed grew, watered with potato vodka until a flower of truth had sprouted, and from a seasoned microphone, shrouded by seven shining candles, the prophet shouted lines from Kafka until the whole holy secret was revealed, and a seven-trumpeted choir followed. Not a drop of blessed wine was wasted, and after this, not a single sinner doubted. And another strange poem that came from my time at Rivendell that was published in the new edition of the Blue Nib, an Irish publication. Sweet Gum Ball. Spiny hotel with vacancies, pits, ant caverns, acne scars, jester's hat, crown of thorns, hard sponge in my closed palm. Punchy like the massager I bought for my feet at the health food store, which I loaned to my yoga instructor because her feet ached, and she is as holy as anyone I know, and thus deserving of sacrificial offerings. You leave imprints on my fingers that could be used in forensics. And with that thought and urge to get in the pond, lie down face first, be discovered all mossy, poetically dead, a ghost who haunts the sweet gum tree. Spiked hair, you roll, tumble, pinball, prize, hide inside a tiny green parasite. Instrument of torture, pointed ball and chain, swinging, swinging, the world in an eyeball, globe, a crucifixion grape. On that note, my friends, I've got to call an end to today's session. Thank you for being with me on my journey. Caught in the dark with a radio spark. Meet me where the most light falls. You've been listening to Where the Most Light Falls with DJ Tamara on Spirit Plants Radio, broadcasting around the world at spiritplantsradio.com. Turn on, tune in, and visit us on the web at spiritplantsradio.com for schedules, playlists, archives, and more.